On today's episode of Locked On Nets, Josh Basco solo to break down the Nets' four-game winning streak, Spencer Dinwiddie's heroics, and Jarrett Allen's suddenly meteoric rise coming up.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Josh Bass, back here after a couple of great Nets wins, now on a four-game winning streak. They are making some things happen despite being banged up, and Kyrie Irving and, of course, Caris LeVert not having played these last few games. We're going to talk about the victories over the hated Knicks and the not as hated, but still, hey, well, maybe we just hate them anyway. The Cleveland Cavaliers, Spencer Dinwiddie's heroics, Joe Harris having a really nice performance against his old team, and Jarrett Allen in rare form these last two games. We'll touch on all that. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, equal opportunity here. We love all of those applications. Rate us, review us, tell us your feedback. My co-host Marcus Barahal cannot be here for this episode. We have been having trouble syncing up schedules. He's doing it's kind of like the Nets offense earlier this year. It's everyone taking their turn, just going one-on-one. That's what we're doing today. We will hopefully sync up in a little bit and be able to record together and share with you some thoughts that we have both had on these games and go a bit back and forth. But also tweet Marcus Barahal at Marcus Barahal and wish him a happy birthday. His birthday is coming up on Friday, and I know he would appreciate the love from the listeners. You can also tell him that he needs to be here doing this pod. So the Nets have had two really nice wins. Does any win when kind of Kyrie Irving and Caris LeVert and, of course, KD are out, that's going to be a great win. Because when you look at the Nets right now, and especially in this Cavs game where DeAndre Jordan didn't play and Nick Claxton had to play the backup five, I mean, this is not a particularly talented team. You have Spencer Dinwiddie, who has really rose to the occasion, become a really excellent point guard and someone that, despite his struggles early in the season with turnovers and poor shot selection, has come into his own and obviously was rewarded for winning the Eastern Conference Player of the Week last week. Kudos to Spencer. But, you know, the Nets, you look at where they are now, they've won four in a row. They're up to 9-8. And considering how tumultuous these first 17 games have been, I think you should be absolutely ecstatic as a Nets fan saying, hey, listen, they have a winning record. They're pretty entrenched right now in the playoffs because they're the seventh seed, 2.5 games up on Orlando that just had the big Nick Vucevic injury. Kind of the eighth seed onwards in the East has just been a complete mess this year. There doesn't look like there's going to be a team that rises out of that morass and really kind of makes a run for it and can push the Nets down from 7-8. I think it's more so going to be it's just like one of these really inept teams somehow just befuddles their way and backs their way into a playoff spot. I think that's more likely. So if you're the Nets, you definitely have a big margin for error to get comfortable, grow together as a team, and hopefully progress and play a bit better than you have once everyone is back up to speed. And I think when you look at the Knicks game and the Cavs game, the one thing you can say is that the ball movement was definitely better. The Nets came out in that Knicks game really crisp passing, moving the ball well. Torian Prince in particular was a guy that I had criticized for his lack of ball movement, a guy that, listen, he likes to shoot the ball, and he's shown that. And when he's knocking down threes, it's great. But when he's missing his threes and then just forcing either long twos or just like drives that have no chance when he goes to the basket, that's when he gets into trouble. But I thought he did a really nice job in that Knicks game, moving the ball, had a really nice pocket pass to Jarrett Allen in that first quarter that resulted in a very easy dunk for Allen. And the Nets really had their way when the starters were on the court. Because the Knicks, I mean, their defense was just so bad. The Nets were just running really simple pick and rolls, and they just had no one coming over to protect the weak side and help. So Jarrett Allen was getting just so easy dunks with no one in his path at the basket. I mean, it's just shocking in an NBA game in 2019 to see that poor level of pick and roll defense. So the Knicks really struggled there. The only thing that made this game close was that Wayne Ellington, former Net, who's quietly becoming a Nets killer, he had that insane game against them earlier this year when the Knicks kind of inserted him in late just to be a spark plug. He had a 4 of 7 game shooting the three. Marcus Morris was 7 of 8 on threes. He hit like 7-8 shots in a row even. It was kind of like, hey, the Nets had a really nice like 7 to 10 point lead kind of throughout the first half. And then Marcus Morris eventually got going. And then when the Nets started ding up on him, he was still going and going. And he proved to be a really difficult matchup for them, kind of in the mold of guys that are tough for them to guard. Those wings that can shoot over people, have size, and have just a good touch. That's really what you need Kevin Durant back for. But none of the current guys on this team have the wherewithal to really guard those players consistently. So Marcus Morris was able to eat. And it really kind of was just a poor performance by the Knicks that helped the Nets win this game. Shooting 9 of 16 on free throws. Frank Ntilikina had a wide open three late that could have tied the game, but he missed it. And the Nets just did enough to win. I mean, Dinwiddie got to the line 14 times. Spectacular effort from him to do that. Was hitting his three ball, drained a couple in the first half that were pretty contested, tough looks. And, you know, for him, his three-point shot is very inconsistent, I'd say. But it's not the type of thing that makes me mad because the attempts he takes are very difficult. When he's shooting off the catch and he's, like, pretty open, he's money. But obviously when he's taking his step back, Steph Curry, James Harden type threes, he's not going to be able to hit those at a really successful rate. But given the Nets team construct right now, they just don't have a ton of offensive weapons. You're fine with him taking that shot because he definitely can still knock it down. Garrett Temple, I thought, had a really good game, draining 4 threes, competing on defense. And then Jarrett Allen was a solid player inside, 18 points and 10 rebounds. Did a good job, you know. It's tough for him because the Knicks have a lot of guys who are smaller height-wise, but just complete bruisers in like a Taj Gibson, Julius Randle, Marcus Morris. They play Mitchell Robinson a lot off the bench, who was a huge difference maker, especially in the first half. But the guy just can't stay out on the court, fouled out in 19 minutes. And his just, whether it's a cheap offensive foul that he picks up, going over the back, the play that fouled him out at the end of the game, because remember they called a foul on a play where he blocked Jarrett Allen, but then Fizdale challenged the call, it was overturned, so Mitchell Robinson had a new lease on life, and then immediately commits his sixth foul, hedging on a screen 35 feet from the basket, just like a needless foul. So he really needs to get more discipline, because when he's focused and being able to be on the court, he can make a huge impact, because he was blocking shots, and also when the Nets players were driving, they were noticeably altering their shots against him just because they were afraid of his length and trying to shoot it over him. So he can really have a Gobert-like influence on the court when he is kind of at his fullest. And there was a couple other really funny moments in this Knicks game. But first, let me tell you guys about MyBookie. Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this Thanksgiving week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congrats. That's yours. That's awesome. A little extra holiday spending money. But if you lose, congrats to you as well. MyBookie will give you all of your money back. It's a no-brainer. You literally can't lose. It's no risk, all gravy. Doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all to come play. So quit waiting around and sign up today. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDON, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for this week only. If you're a football fan, or even if you're just a casual kind of watcher, you still don't want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply can't lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. Sounds good to me. I think the two other things in this Knicks game, one was the way that the game ended with, there was maybe like a 0.4 seconds on the clock. The Nets were up by 2 and inbounding the ball by the Knicks basket on the sideline. And Dinwiddie was like insistent getting in Kenny Atkins' face saying, oh, just like throw it off the person's back. The Knicks defenders back because they're going to be turned around trying to play the man rather than play the ball. And they did that, and Joe Harris just threw it off the back of the Knicks, and game was over like that. And it was a really great moment and just kind of a nice cap on the game. And, you know, these things are not difficult. I think definitely at times teams overcomplicate them, and that's just one example of, you know, keep it simple, stupid. KISS philosophy. And then also there was something that caused a lot of stir on Twitter. It was Nets announcer Richard Jefferson, obviously former great Nets player, someone that has won a championship, and then as a broadcaster in his second year, really likes to talk and tell stories. And he was telling Ian Eagle about a time when after his last season in the NBA with the Cavs, RJ said that the Knicks were the only team that offered him a contract, and that's when he knew he had to retire. So this caused a lot of stir on Twitter, and then it came out with the Knicks PR saying, hey, you know, that's actually made up. We never offered RJ a contract. And it turns out that he was just completely trolling them, which was very funny. So I love RJ. He's definitely very talkative, very lively on the broadcast. Sometimes I wish he would focus a bit more on the game at hand, but he definitely knows how to make it interesting and exciting. But now let's talk about RJ's former team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who the Nets played on Monday night, got that 108-106 win. No Kevin Love for the Cavs. And really, their team was kind of buoyed by Larry Nance, who had a nice game. Sexton was inconsistent and missed a really big free throw late, which would have put the Cavs up. But Jordan Clarkson is quickly becoming a Nets killer. Remember in that triple overtime game last year, he dropped 40. That was an insane game. I was watching it from a hotel room in Florida and just riveted to my computer. And he hit 5 threes this game, really came alive in the fourth quarter. And he's just a difficult matchup for any of the Nets guards to stop. You could think that Dinwiddie would be able to handle him pretty well, but probably the best matchup would be LeVert, who's obviously out, and then maybe Nwaba, who has been banished from Kenny Atkinson's rotation. So no immediately great matchup for Jordan Clarkson there. But, you know, the Nets really played well enough. I think the starters did a nice job. Torian Prince got off to a really good start. Thought he was passing the ball well, hitting threes, had a really nice he faked a pass and then ended up being wide open from three and just pulled and knocked down the shot. But really the main guy in this one was Jared Allen, because he was just a beast inside, 22 points, 21 rebounds against a team that he should put up numbers against. Tristan Thompson is an excellent rebounder and a good defensive player, but he just is not as athletic as Allen. And even though Allen doesn't have the strength on Thompson, he was using his length really well, tipping balls to himself and being able to go up strong, dunk the ball. It was an interesting stat because they showed a stat where Jared Allen's average shot distance is third shortest in the NBA this year. That's what he needs to stick to. I know he was trying to take those corner threes last year at times, and there'll be times where a Nets guard is driving and he's just camped out at the corner at the three-point line. He needs to get inside, because even if he could hit those threes or even hit them at like a relatively reasonable rate, it's cramping the spacing because no one is going to guard him out there until he becomes like an elite shooter, which isn't going to happen because his misses are terrible. So given how good he is as an offensive rebounder, it's really important for him to be inside cleaning up some misses. Especially you look at this Nets team right now, it's more of a jump shot heavy team, and having a guy that can get them extra possessions is going to be so huge. So he had probably, his best game as a pro. There was one play where he had gotten a pocket pass. I think it was from Temple, but he kind of drove the ball down the lane, spun in one motion, and hit the layup. And that was the type of play that he needs to really be doing. He had that also that insane one-handed alley-oop finish from Theo Pinson. He had that late block at the end on the Jordan Clarkson drive. He was everywhere. I think both him and Nick Claxton did a really good job because they were both super active contesting shots at the rim. And, you know, listen, the Cavs are not a good team by any stretch of the imagination. They're a very young team with their guards, Sexton and Darius Garland and Kevin Porter coming off the bench. But they still have some talent. And the way that I thought Nick Claxton handled his game in the absence of DeAndre Jordan was excellent. 3 blocks in 13 minutes. And him and Jared Allen did what they needed to do. Just be deterrents around the rim, be 7 feet tall, and occasionally those lead to blocks. And most other times they lead to shots being altered or missed because you're not used to having to shoot over someone who's that quick and that big. So they definitely did their part there, and good job by the Nets to hold the Cavs to only 106 points. Obviously, that sounds like a lot still, but kind of in this day and age, that's a pretty solid defensive performance, also considering that this is a very fast-paced game. So definitely nice to see that activity there, and then I think Allen being able to shoot 90% from the field and no turnovers for him, which means no illegal screens, so that's also a huge sign. And I think just the little skill things that he's been doing, like what I mentioned before about him being able to catch the pass, spin to the rim, and have a nice little finish where it wasn't just a dunk. Those are the plays where it's really going to take him from just being a solid center that can execute on basically dunking the ball when he's wide open to really becoming a more well-rounded offensive player that when things get tighter in the playoffs and hopefully the later rounds of the playoffs, if the Nets are fortunate enough to make it there, probably not this season, but hopefully next year when KD's back, those are the plays where he needs to separate himself and become someone who won't be a liability on offense in the playoffs. So definitely encouraging the way he has he's played the last few games. And, you know, no, it's not against dynamite teams, and he'll have a bigger test tonight against the Celtics over these next two games, even though they're not a great team defensive center matchup for him. It's not like a Gobert type. Overall, they are a good defensive team and have some interesting guys. So it'll be interesting to see how he shapes up against those guys. But, I mean, this game, I think it was a good microcosm of you had a few players step up. Joe Harris, 8 of 17 from the field, 19 points against his former team. He's becoming the new Mason Plumlee with all of his reverse layups. He has mastered that, and it's a great way for him to shield himself from shot blockers and be able to finish effectively given his lack of athleticism, even though he is very strong. But really, it was kind of those few guys getting it done. Spencer Dinwiddie, thought, had a good game, 9 assists, only 1 turnover. Was struggling with his 3 and missed a couple of shots that he normally does make and might have forced some things. But even though he only got to the line twice, he was hitting his mid-ranger. And that's something that me and Marcus have talked about early on in the season, where Dinwiddie last year was very comfortable pulling up from 3 and shooting 3s off the dribble. Very comfortable, obviously, getting to the rim and driving all the way to the basket. But when he was in that middle zone, his floater was poor. He didn't necessarily have a mid-range shot that he felt comfortable in. And for any elite guard in this league, that's what you need. You need that tool wherein the defense is taking away the 3s and getting to the basket, and you're having a hard time getting a whistle from the refs. You need that mid-range shot. And for him to bury that mid-ranger at the end of the game and have that game-winning shot and feel comfortable doing so, that's a huge sign in his development. But, I mean, this game was, the last couple minutes were tough to watch. So the Nets took a 106-97 lead with 2:10 left after that Torian Prince 3. And the remaining 2 minutes and 10 seconds of the game took 18 minutes of real time. It was insane that we had to review, like, it seemed like 10 different out-of-bounds plays, some that were very difficult for the refs to see, some that were obvious, but they still wanted to check it anyway. It really just got out of hand. I mean, listen, NBA games take a very long time, especially in the fourth quarter. Things bog down, I get it, but it should not take that long. And just completely brought the pace of play to a crawl, and it felt more like a college game where there's a foul or a review on every play. But, I mean, overall, the Nets get a win. You have to be happy with that. Jonathan Musa and Theo Pinson, they had their moments in this game. Musa had a nice run at the end of the third quarter when the Nets were losing their lead a little bit, but ultimately, I mean, this bench, the guys they played on the bench were Claxton, Shumpert, Musa, and Pinson. It's just going to be tough to generate reliable offense with those guys. I mean, Pinson can be very out of control with his dribble and struggles to finish around the basket, and obviously has a weak three-point shot. Musa has really struggled hitting the 3 this year, even though you have to like that he's fearless taking these deep attempts. And I think I'm a little conflicted with Musa because he's very aggressive. And I think that aggressiveness is helping him get to the free throw line and buoy his efficiency stats, which would be terrible without his free throws because he can't hit anything right now. And then is helping him on defense because he's relatively slow of foot. He's not that strong. You'd think he would get blown by on defense, but he's really competing hard. And just due to his sheer size at 6'9", he hasn't been a complete liability on that end. I think he's actually held up pretty well. But offensively, which is supposed to be his calling card, he's struggling. He needs to find his shot. He needs to figure out, maybe develop more of a floater game, because going to the rim against these NBA centers, he's just having a hard time finishing over them. And, you know, no one expected these two guys to be in such an important role. Obviously, the Nets could be relatively equipped if one of their main three creators had an injury. But when two of them go down, and Karis and Kyrie, that's when they're really going to struggle. So they're obviously, Pinson and Musa, forced into an unenviable situation, and they've made the best of it, but still not guys that you want to have a lead role on your team going forward. And I'm not super bullish on either guy's prospects with the team going forward. I think Pinson might be a little bit more interesting just due to his defense and athleticism. And I think he could look really good as kind of a tertiary creator on a bench unit. And Musa could also, if he gets his shot figured out, but that's going to be kind of the key swing scale for Musa, because I think even though he's competed defensively, Pinson just has a much higher ceiling on that end with his ability to pressure the ball and help from the weak side as well. So that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Nets. Of course, the big matchup tonight, Celtics-Nets. Nets going to Boston. No Kyrie Irving for this one. Hopefully he's able to play Friday when the team has a home-and-home in Boston and the Nets are back in Barclays Center. Would love to get one of these next two games. It's going to be tough if Kyrie can't play either of them. Kemba Walker is probable with his neck injury. DeAndre Jordan still looking iffy if he's going to play. He missed the Cavs game with a sore ankle. Doesn't look like it's anything major, but you never know, knock on wood, with these things. So hopefully the Nets can compete tonight and Dinwiddie can continue his magnificence. As I mentioned before, subscribe to the podcast, rate and review us, follow all of our friends over at Locked On Nets Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Follow Marcus at Marcus Barahal and give him a birthday best wishes. And I am at JMBass_. And until next time, be well.